Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. You know, I have this question. Am I going to be more popular than a fish shirt? That's the big question. Is a fishing shirt going to be more popular than something useful? I'm not saying a fishing shirt isn't useful. It is very useful because people would rather not see your upper torso in that sense. But, you know, here's the thing. You get this calendar. You send pictures into Facebook. We judge whether the best pictures. That's this new contest we got. It's a contest we've got. And you send in pictures of your garden and the best pictures. And maybe this week it's the best tomato seedlings. I don't know. I want you to keep sending into text, but we also send it into Facebook. We got a Facebook page, FM Talk 106.5. You do all those Facebook kind of things. You know more about that than I do. You just go and do the Facebook thing on there. You press like, and the things that, and the pictures that get the most likes, they win the contest, and you get this cool little poster, which is the Plain Gardening planting wheel. Somebody sent into Facebook that the first picture we got is a picture of an old planting wheel. It looks like it came from 1893. It's been laminated, used well. People have been using this thing for a while. It helps. It definitely helps. Listen, a couple of things. We're going to talk about gladiolas. I hope I don't forget to talk about it. But I want to talk about seedlings because I'm looking at the weather, and I think we got some uncertainty coming up next week. But next week, if most of the problems that people are going to be having with their seedlings right now can be greatly remedied by putting those seedlings outside next week during the day. Let me say this with emphasis. Put those seedlings outside next week during the day. Give them sunlight during the day. Bring them in at night. It's going to be a little too cold at night. But put them outside. Let them get some air circulation. Those stems are going to toughen up. They will. Amazing. They're not going to stretch. They're not going to be stretched looking for sunlight because there's plenty of sun. Give them some sunlight. You don't need to. It's going to be raining, so you don't want to put them out in the rain. But if you've got a porch where they're getting plenty of sunlight, a great thing to do this coming week. Sunlight is kind of low this time of year still, so it's coming under the eaves. It's a really cool thing to do. If you do that, you may not have to do any of the other things we talked about today. But I'm looking at a lot of seedlings, and they look really beautiful, but they're inside, they're in closets, they're in places where there's, no matter how, I guess if you've got, you know, if you're growing something illegal, you probably have the right kind of lights. I hope you're not. But if you are, but otherwise, there's nothing like sunlight. There's nothing like sunlight. It makes a big difference, and that's good. And the air circulation, it'll be so good for those plants. They'll do so much better. Really cool, really cool little things. So, okay, good. We got that. Gladiolus. Somebody said, what do I think about gladiolus? Let me tell you what I think about. I think they're cool plants, and as you move farther up north from the coast, you'll see around old home sites, I think Citronelle and northward, up towards, up to where my old family home place is, up towards Shibuda and up in Mississippi that direction, and then back over into Clark County and Monroe County, getting out in the woods, up towards Birmingham, around old house sites, you'll see gladiolus, and there's some really cool and beautiful ones that have been grown for years, and they're really neat. They all do well. I think any gladiolus does well. The one thing I'll say about gladiolus is, and let me tell you one other thing about gladiolus. Baldwin County was once the great center for gladiolus growing. It's really interesting. And there's a gentleman who's passed away who had a house there, and some of you may remember him. I think it was a house there in Foley or Locks. I guess it's Foley. And his house was right there beside the road. He had some beautiful native azaleas growing in his yard. I stopped and talked to him, and he was a great grower. And back in the days when Baldwin County actually was serious about growing stuff. And Baldwin County, they had potatoes, they had other stuff, but they had gladiolus. They were great market growers for gladiolus. They had big fields of gladiolus, and sometimes you'd see those little remnants of those gladiolus in the fields back in the days before we built South Baldwin County up into the whatever it is now. And you'd see them all the time. And they really did, they did well. Here's my thing. And so I like gladiolus. They make me feel good. They have a history. So that's just me personally. And I like the way they look. I will tell you this about gladiolus. They don't bloom for long. You get a very short season on them, which is fine. Ephemerality is not a bad thing. Things that happen briefly, you enjoy them while you can. It's what life's about. So they don't have a long bloom season. It's usually in April or May, maybe into May, but usually in April or maybe as late as May along the if farther north. And they're beautiful while they bloom. 7 days, 10 days, really nice. They need to be divided, because if they get a little, some varieties just don't do as well. They get clustered and they don't bloom as well, but gladiolus are fine, and they deserve a place in gardens as part of our history. They're going to be a brief season of bloom, but they're nice. A lot of cool ones out there. We could talk a lot about all the different varieties, some of which I don't even know. Let's see. Let's get some of these other questions here. Any advice on planting and care of Brugmansias, the angel trumpets? Yeah, I love angel trumpets. They do very well. You can keep them alive outside in most places along the Gulf Coast as long as your soil is well drained. I think one of the neat things is that they come back from the roots every year. In mild years, and I don't know whether this one's going to be quite mild enough, but in mild years, the stems will come back. And so you'll start out, you'll get a tree by year two. If the stems have survived the winter, you may start out with a tree in spring. And one thing I'd say to people is don't cut your angel's trumpets back to the ground, because until spring, until you start seeing the new growth come out. And when you start to see the new growth come out, then you'll know what to cut back. Wait till it comes out on pretty strong. Or you may be cutting off perfectly good wood that will give you a head start on blooms and on size, and you could end up with a really cool looking thing. Now, if you want to keep it really small, you'll have to cut it off at the ground. So they do really well in the ground. Not all Brugmansias do well in the south. Some don't like hot nights, particularly some of the truly red varieties, the red and yellow varieties, don't do as well here. But the oranges, the pinks, the yellows, there are quite a lot of them, the whites, are stunning. They do really well. They're probably susceptible to nematodes, and for that reason I would say mulch them really well. Provide good organic soil. Mulch them really well to reduce the nematode problems. If you want to, you can put them on the east side of your house, which is what I did. And that way, you give them a little bit of protection. A little bit of a greater chance that in warm years, your plant, the whole trunk may survive the winter and begin sprouting pretty high up. They're basically tomato relatives. Am I right about that? Yeah, I think they are. I think they're in Solanaceae. I'll have to look that up. But they do need lots of fertilizer. As time goes on, not a lot, but they need some. And the mulch helps tremendously. having tons of organic matter may reduce the need for fertilizer, but it probably helps to fertilize them to get the best growth and to keep them growing through the years, making sure you get good water during dry periods, but not too wet. You don't want the ground to be too wet, particularly in winter. Organic matter is the key, as it is with most plants. Brugmansias. I hope that helped. Hope that helps. You know, if you're worried about losing Brugmansias, one of the things you can do is you can take cuttings late in the year and just put them in water, and they'll root out really well. We'll talk about that when we come back. Gugusa. Listen to that, David. Hey, we'll be back here in just a minute.
I wanna be, 'cause Gugusa is so crazy over me. Gugusa grows in Italy. They love it on the farm. It's something like zucchini flavored with Italian charm. I call my gal Gugusa 'cause she's sweet as she can be. She loves to hear me say, Gugusa, please, obachi me. My Gugusa.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of texts, but Ginger, gosh, Ginger, you've been waiting so long for me to pay attention, and I'm paying attention now. Let's talk about daffodils for a second. You there?
Okay.
Ginger? Yeah. So,
well, I'm feeling guilty because I did not get my daffodils planted. And
yes,
I've got these yellow trumpets. And what should I do with them?
Well, so let's, do you know the cultivar name of those yellow trumpets?
Now, how would I know that? I'm just looking at the package here. Cultivar name. Where do I find that?
Here's a rule. Here's a very good rule. If it doesn't have a cultivar name on the package, you probably don't want it.
Okay.
So here's, I got a great, what, huh?
Did I just stick them in the ground and see what the heck happens, you know? Sometimes we get surprised.
Here's, that's what people do, and here's why you will regret it.
Okay.
They aren't going to bloom. I can almost guarantee it. I give you a 99% probability that they will never bloom.
Okay.
Because they're probably daffodils that were designed to sell to people in New Jersey.
All right.
And New Jersey has a very different climate than ours, and and we don't get enough winter chilling, and what they're going to do is they will grow. They're going to put on tons of leaves, but they will never get the kind of winter cold that will initiate blooming. Now, there are lots of daffodils that do well here, but I guarantee you they will always have names on them if you if you purchase them. And I hope you didn't spend a lot of money on it, because it's probably not going to work out either way. If you put some out, put one out. Mark it and put a big X on it so that you'll know it. And if it doesn't bloom this year or next year, you know that you don't want it. And likelihood is it's not going to bloom this year, even in the best of circumstances, even if it's a good cultivar. But, Ginger, next fall, next August and September, put it on your calendar to call me, and let's talk about how to get the right daffodil narcissus varieties for your garden.
Okay. Hey, can I ask another question that's totally unrelated?
Yes, ma'am, you can.
I live out on the most beautiful acreage here in Locksley, and the deer, oh my God, they're loving to eat everything around me. So I hear different things from people. Some say, oh, you know, go to the hairdresser, get a bunch of human hair and put out, or cayenne pepper, or anything I can do to keep them away from my plants.
Well, we know we're going to get a lot of messages from people who say to shoot them, but of course, You can't do that. And
they're next to my house.
Yeah, so the hair is not going to work. It's just not going to work. They're already attracted to your yard. In fact, there's probably no repellent that's really going to work once you've got them in your yard pretty good and they've already found something good to eat on. Here's certain types of fences work, and we can talk about that, but it can be a little bit of a pain. Here's what works really well, dogs.
Uh-huh, if you've I got, guess, yeah.
Yeah, so if you've got a dog and it's a dog that likes to bark, it don't even have to be a big dog. In fact, it may be better to have what we in Mississippi and Alabama used to call feist dogs. You ever heard of a feist dog?
Yeah.
It just a little feist that barks like crazy. A little rat terrier, and here's the thing: you got to make them a nice, comfortable little place at night outside near the garden with a little house, and put a nice long chain on them, but not too long. Give them some water, the dog, and let them sit there, and they will go crazy every time there's a deer in the garden, and it will eventually make the deer stop. And in fact, one of the cool things is that when dogs start barking, every dog in the neighborhood starts barking, and then if you've got another dog inside that's not on a chain, when you hear the little dog barking, you just open the door and let the other dog go, and then you'll find him, 3 miles away chasing deer. So dogs work. That is one thing I can tell you right away. The repellents don't work that well.
That's the best advice I've gotten yet.
Yeah, well, it works. It works.
Okay. Great. Right. Well, thanks. You've been a big help to me this morning, and my husband and I both enjoy your program every Sunday morning, that's for sure.
All right, Ginger, call me back this fall. Let's get your daffodils straightened out.
You bet. I'll mark my calendar now, okay? Have a good day.
All right. You too. Thank you. A lot of texts, and I want to get to all of them because there were some really good questions. I have a ginkgo and a red maple would be really nice. Someone is writing, who was it? I'll find it again. But so what kind of red maple? What variety? Here's an interesting thing. The named varieties of red maple, if they've got a name on them beyond just red maple, if it's a cultivar name like Red Glory or October Glory, they do terrible here because all of those, every one of them were selected in Ohio or New Jersey. They are very short-lived. They perform poorly here along the Gulf Coast. The one red maple that I can say is spectacular along the Gulf Coast consistently is our native red maple, the Drummond red maple. It is a species, Acer drummondii. It's the one that grows in the swamps. If you're driving over in fall and you look, in fact, in spring, drive over right now, they ought to be in flower. They ought to be starting to flower. And maybe even advance as far as fruiting now, depending on the winter. But flower or fruit, you drive over the Delta. Drive over, Dolly Parton, and look out both ways. You'll see that red. That is our native Drummond red maple. In fall, they're absolutely spectacular. How do you find a Drummond red maple? I don't know. But if you can find the natives, and you might find them along some little banks or other things, they're great. The Mobile Botanical Gardens occasionally gets Drummond red maple in at the sales. They are the only ones I can tell you that'll have consistent color, and they will. No red maple is long-lived, let me tell you. All red maples are short-lived, including Drummond red maple. Drummond red maple probably does better in terms of longevity than most. It is a great plant for the Gulf Coast, great color. Do not plant it immediately next to the house. It won't be that long, but it is beautiful. Drummond red maple, D-R-U-M-M-O-N-D. It's a species, not a cultivar. It wasn't selected in Ohio. It was selected over hundreds of thousands of years here along the Gulf Coast. Isn't that cool? Drummond red maple, really great plant for us. Daniel, cottonseed meal works great. Cottonseed meal works great as a fertilizer. You don't need to overdo it, but it's perfect. It's hard to overdo cottonseed meal. Always use cottonseed meal with organic matter. It's better that way for a lot of reasons. In fact, any fertilizer, but just trust me, use the organic matter. Can you grow a large varieties of tomatoes and pepper seedlings next to each other without them cross-pollinating? Well, effectively, yes. If you're not saving seeds, it's never a problem. As long as you don't save the seeds, you're fine, because the cross-pollination in everything except for corn, and we won't get into corn, it's a different kind of booger, but cross-pollination in all these, it doesn't affect the fruits that you're growing this year. It only affects the seeds that you plant next year. So yes, you can put them next to each other. Now here's the other thing. Most tomatoes and peppers are self-fertile. I know this is weird, but this is what humans did to plants. They messed with them. They've been messing with plants for a long time, and they made plants forget about how to have sex. I'm sorry, but I have to say it. That's what we did. And so a lot of tomatoes and peppers don't really remember how. They're not really in a position, literally and figuratively, to have true sex anymore, so they don't cross-pollinate. Crazy. They self-pollinate. And that's even crazier, and we won't get into it, but yes, you're completely free. I won't go into any more gory details. Plant them next to each other as long as you're not saving the seeds. If you're saving the seeds, we got to talk a little bit more. Lots of other questions. Tara, I see you out there. I hear you. I hadn't heard you yet, but I see you, and I'm coming back.
If I hadn't been a-riding that Tennessee stud, I had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw, and one of her brothers was about outlaw. I sent her a letter by my Uncle Foot, then I rode away on the Tennessee stud.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, we got business to do here, Tony. Let's cut that out. Cut it out. That's enough. Cut it out. There you go. Keith, yes, I said it. I said it. I even said it in the middle of the show. You know, if we learned about the reason we talk about birds and bees is because everybody's afraid to talk about plants. Doggy. You know, plants really, I like to say plants perfected sex long before humans came around. And boy, it's wild. It is just wild. We should talk about it sometime. But it gets confusing after a while, I admit, because plants got lots of ways of thinking about how all this works, and they got all kind of strategies, and they do funky things. And if we learned about sex from plants, well, maybe it would have solved some of our other problems, but we don't, and we have to takes a while. But some plants, effectively tomatoes and peppers, are now self-pollinating. They always had that capability, but now they're all self-pollinating, which means that they don't really have true sex. They are actually, because sex is about having two different parents. Right? That's what sex is. And with plants, there's only one parent with tomatoes and peppers. And that's weird. That's crazy. But it happens. Plants have reserved the right to do this because they've been fiddling with this idea for a long time. We cultivated plants that don't have true sex. And so they don't need bees. They don't need, you know, that's the other crazy thing is that there's always three things usually involved in true sex for plants, not just the two plant parents, but something else. bees, birds, wind, water. Crazy, isn't it? We could talk about it a long time. But tomatoes and peppers, grow them right next to each other. They're fine as long as you're not preserving seeds. If you're going to save the seeds, we need to talk. We got to talk. We can figure that one out. Because occasionally, tomatoes and peppers have sex. Not often, but occasionally they do. And so if you're going to save the seeds, you probably don't want that to have happened. So we got to talk about it. But we're going to get a headache if we keep talking about plant sex. So we're not going to talk about it anymore this morning. We're going to save a whole show for that later on. Later on. Tara, I'm listening. What's up?
Well, first of all, I already have a headache, and I'm not even a sexagenarian, okay?
Yeah, that's right.
The contest, I think the contest thing sounds great. I'm so glad to hear that it's going to be going on. I'm not a contest person myself, although I will ask for help with something. And it's also interesting that Ginger it was like she was reading my mind, literally. She made me grateful that I don't have deer, and I don't believe I have rabbits. But I got lots and lots of other rodents, mostly squirrels.
Yep. Right.
Squirrels, and probably some rats, and an occasional armadillo or possum and or raccoon. So, even if you get the seedlings up, then you got to kind of fend them off, particularly at this time of year, right? Because, everything's hungry, is looking for something to eat, nothing else is growing, or things that they don't want are growing, So, my question and my invitation is, I've started an experiment using, and she was also talking about, hair. Well, having taken my dogs to the vet, one of them is like, squirrels are about half his size, particularly the fox squirrels that we have around here in these trees, okay? He's shaggy, but anyway, they produce enough fur, but I got tired of throwing it out, and I don't do a compost, heap generally, but my experiment has been, when I was sweeping stuff up on the way to the vets, because lots and lots of us have dogs, and cats, and now is when the fur builds up inside, too. So instead of just tossing it out or sprinkling it around, this time I took it and I put it on some of the containers where I have peppers that are still growing over the winter season outside, and I put them on some other things that I'm not as concerned about, like some of the purslane that's coming up, just in different other areas, just to see if it's going to work. And that was over half a week ago, and I went out and checked it right before I made this call. And so far, even the hanging pot, peppers in hanging pots, you'd think that, nothing would bother it. Rabbits won't jump in that, but the squirrels will come down and jump, they'll try to bury something in it and go back for it later and dig everything up that you worked on, right?
So, that's right. So let me...
Yeah, do you know anything about, has there ever been...
Yeah, so I've tried...
Person?
Yeah, so let me... I've Yes, so let me interrupt you for just a second to say, I've tried the dog hair before.
Yeah.
And effectively, I think dog hair works as long as the dog hair barks.
And it does, but he's too little to leave outside.
Yeah, so as long as the dog hair barks, it works very well. If it doesn't bark, I'm not sure the dog hair works as effectively as I might like. And I've actually tried it in several different places. It's one of those things where I don't know. I think it's worth trying. I think, I wouldn't bet my ceilings on it. But it's worth trying. Squirrels, here's an interesting thing. If you've got fox squirrels and the fox squirrels are bothering you, that is extraordinary. That's exceptional. That's wild, because fox squirrels are now...
I'm half wild, and thank you so much. I won't take up any more of your time. Thank you.
Yeah. So fox squirrels are wild. So if they're very rare now. So that's interesting. Gray squirrels are usually the problem. I would have said, and here's the thing, I would have said that fox squirrels are rarely give anybody any problems in their gardens. If anybody has a problem with fox squirrels, you know what fox squirrels are? They look like monkeys. I mean, they are weird looking. They're big, giant things. They're not gray squirrels. They don't even look gray. They're black or red or sometimes with stripes. They have to have a mask that makes them look like some kind of weird little monkey. They're pretty rare. So they're not usually problems. It's usually the gray squirrels, which live around humans very well. The fox squirrels don't live around humans quite as well. So an interesting question. Does the dog hair work? I'm not sure. And how do you determine that it really works? Well, we ought to have a conversation about that someday. How do you know that something is really working? Bill, I'm listening. Tell me what's up.
Your columns the past couple of weeks, I read them, and I availed myself for those Japanese cucumbers you mentioned, and some rattlesnake pole beans. A couple of questions. You mentioned half runner beans. Is that a type of bean or a specific bean?
Well, it's a great question. So half runners are a type of bean, broadly speaking. There are many types of half runners. There are, however, some are sold as half runners. That's what they're called. There's one that Southern Exposure sells called non-tough half runner, which is an old Bill Best variety. And it's a pretty good one. I've had some other half runners, Nantahala, which I cautious about recommending because beans are in short supply this year. But half runner is generally a type, and don't be fooled by the name half runner, because the old half runners, they don't half run. I mean, they start out at a full speed and they just keep accelerating. In theory, they don't get quite as tall as some of the other pole beans, but they get pretty big. I've never grown a half runner in our climate that doesn't need trellising. They're going to be 6 feet tall,
and
you'll benefit from trellising. Non-tough. It's called, I think Southern Exposure sells it as non-tough half runner. How's that for a name? And it was Bill Best selected it because he said some of the modern varieties of half runner were developed for commercial purposes, and they just weren't tender like the old varieties were. So he redeveloped from old heirlooms called non-tough half runner. It's said to be – I haven't grown it, but it's Bill Best does great stuff with his beans. So, yeah.
Now, the cucumbers and beans, would you start them as seedlings or just plant directly into the garden, and when?
Bill, great question. I would, with beans, you definitely got to start them in the garden. Just no two ways about it. Doesn't make sense otherwise. Wait till the soil is warm. It's going to be a while before a lot of the beans are ready to go in. We'll talk about it in March. March will be about the time. Cucumbers, generally, I'd say it's the same way. If you start cucumbers and as soon as you see the first true seed leads, if you start them in a big pot, then you can plant them out. But in general, they don't transplant well, and it's better to go ahead and plant them directly in the garden. And we're going to do that in March. And Bill, call me back in March, and let's talk about how to make sure the soil is warm enough for both of those things. We can talk about how to do it and make sure it's good then.
Well, I'll tell you real quickly about an accident I had. I take all my garden waste or my vegetable waste out, and with that went a bunch of cucumber seeds on top of my compost pile and covered with clear plastic. And I went out there one day, and I had more cucumber leaves coming out of there than you can imagine.
Yeah. So it will. And the question is, did those cucumbers, and we have to come back to this term, which I said I wasn't going to use again this morning, but we have to come back to it. The question is, did those cucumbers have genuine sex? If they had genuine sex, and they probably did, given cucumbers, they are prone to it. Uh-huh. You have no idea what those cucumbers are going to look like when they grow up.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're plowed under right now, but there you go.
That's good.
Well, thank you.
That's good.
fall.
All right, Bill. Hey, March, call me back. Let's talk about getting that soil warm enough for your cucumbers and your pole beans.
I'll do it.
All right. Look at this. God, we're running through this hour. What are we doing wrong? Are we not talking fast enough?
So my baby down by the river, who she had to come up soon for care. Sweet blossom, come on under the wind.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Plain Gardening. So, again, we got a brief time. I've got a lot of questions that we need to address here before, and I'm going to see. Yeah. Jay, let's listen what's up. Tell me what's up. Jay, you still there? Okay, I think Jay's probably doing something else. Is that fair? So, Jay, I had some questions about winter survival of peppers. Good subject. Let's try it again next week. It's a good subject to talk about. Michael is asking about need some tips for gardening with chickens. And great question, because chickens can be a boon and a disaster for your garden. They have been both for me this past week. Let's talk about the best way to handle those chickens. And I won't have time to do it this morning, but Michael, please call me back just text me back next week and say, chickens. You said you were going to talk about chickens, and I will talk about chickens. John in Irvington says he has a quick question about loquats. Do you need two to set fruit? Boy, we just can't get over this sex question today. Let me tell you, loquats can be self-pollinating, but not very efficiently. And most of the varieties of loquats that we have need cross-pollination. Now, what do we mean by pollination? Why don't we talk about just sex? Because pollination is about having a third party, which is bees in this case. Bees and surfeit flies and lots of other things. Lots of things pollinate loquats. When do loquats bloom? November. And one of the cool things about when they pick to bloom, November and December, that's a hazard if you're living too far north, because it means the flowers don't survive cold spells. But because they bloom in October, November, December, there are lots of pollinators out there who are looking for something to pollinate, and they're not too confused by other things. They're going to cross-pollinate loquats. So if you've got a loquat within a block or a couple of blocks of your tree, it's probably going to get pollinated. And so you'll do just fine. Most loquats, even relatively isolated loquats downtown, there's another tree three blocks away. They produce tons of fruit every year. So, no, you don't need another loquat. And you're going to ask me, well, does it have to be a male or a female loquat? Oh, boy. We got a lot of talking to do about plant sex. Because male and female don't always apply with plants. But you do need another loquat of a different variety for cross-pollination to get good fruit. Some will self-pollinate. Most don't do it very well. And that's okay. They just need some pollination. They need some bees. That's why you don't want to spray the trees with something that'll harm the bees, because you're gonna lose it. Pictures of satsumas with thick rinds. Why does that happen? Yeah, you know, you'll notice that not all the satsumas had the really thick rinds. Sometimes they do, and it's an odd thing. It tends to happen most in the years when something funky happens, that there's not as much fruit on the tree as there are at other times, or when there was cold conditions. A lot of things can cause that kind of puffy, puffy's not the right word, but thickened rind. And in this case, it didn't happen on all your trees. I think it was probably environmental conditions that caused it that this particular year. Weird things with nitrogen, too much nitrogen, not enough nitrogen, too much cold, not enough, whatever. It's hard to determine. It's hard to determine. It usually happens most often with younger trees, happens all the time with younger trees. As trees mature, you see that less often, the thick rind, but in some years where for whatever reason it'll happen, probably won't happen again next year. I don't think it's any kind of bug or anything. I don't think it is. But I think you're going to be fine next year. I didn't help you this past year, but I wasn't going to be able to help you this past year anyway. It's already dead and gone, right? So now we got a new year, and I don't think it's going to happen probably quite that way in the coming year. But it happens to a lot of us. You get that weird kind of fruit, particularly with younger trees. That's the way it happens. What else have we got? If I missed anybody, best way to treat citrus leaf miner. The best way to treat citrus leaf miner is to go do something else. It's really very effective. You will have no problems with citrus leaf miner if you go do something else. And here's why. Citrus leaf miner is not really damaging to the tree. It has a mild effect, but not a serious effect at all. It causes some distortion on those upper leaves. It's true. But the leaves are still photosynthesizing. The tree barely knows it's happening. You notice it because you worry about things that don't look just perfect, and there it is. But it is very effective. It is a very effective treatment just to walk away from citrus leaf miner and let the citrus tree sort it out. Now, if you want to worry about it, you can waste a lot of time because you're not going to figure out how to stop it. You're just not. The leaf miner gets inside the leaf, so any insecticide you spray on that leaf, the citrus leaf miner is already inside the leaf. It's virtually immune from any of that, and plus, it's already in the leaf by the time you spot it, and so you don't want to use a systemic pesticide because then you couldn't eat the fruit, and then you'd have to time it. And everything becomes very unpleasant when you think you're going to do something to stop citrus leaf miner. We do actually have some predators that have come in. We've been reintroduced, and I'm seeing a little less citrus leaf miner than I used to see. And probably most years, you're going to see a declining effects of citrus leaf miner in terms of the visuals. But it's just a visual problem. And you have to look really close. And unless somebody's in your yard and expects you to be living in some kind of paradise where everything is perfect, nobody's going to notice. Nobody's going to care. The citrus tree doesn't care. So there it is. Effective way of dealing with citrus leaf miner, walk away from it. Walk away as fast as you can and do something else. Grow some tomatoes. Grow some peppers. Grow some flowers. What kind of flowers? Oh, right about now, if you're down there, you know you ought to start thinking about getting Tithonia seeds. That'd be really cool. And then you'll have lots of predators, some of which may actually help you with the citrus leaf miners. But, you know, don't worry about it too much. Don't worry about it too much. What else have I forgotten this morning? I think lots of things we got that we got to put on hold. Somebody asked me about the plant sale dates for the plant sale. Generally mid-March, I think we're going to have it. I am waiting to hear the official word. Linda? Nina? Nita? You got to tell me. I'm listening. I want to hear. And we'll know more about when that actually happens. I think it's going to happen this year. And if we're loud enough, we might actually get some of these plants in in and be able to, like we're talking about, like Drummond Red Maple. I think that Drummond Red Maple, easy to get them from Louisiana. Did this go as fast as I thought it would? Did? Man, that's ridiculous. But great music to end the show. Hey, we'll be back next week. Save your questions up. Get your pictures in. We got a contest. Talk to you later. Toil or danger in that fair land.